खुसरा?
यस।
अरे श्योर?
यस। अभी अरंदन से कन्फर्म किया
okay, so I will return the answer sheets next week, and today we'll catch up with one of the very important stages in the development lines. So a lot of things happen in this episode. This is I will the details through a narrative which tries to tell you how did Galileo discover the law of free fall. You possibly already know that Galileo discovered the law of free fall. And what does the law of free fall say?
For any objects of any mass, the time taken is.
Yeah, you are right, but he also adds something else to it. Not only the mass, he also says irrespective of its size. Okay, irrespective of its size, irrespective of its mass, all objects fall at the same rate. But he adds one more qualification. What is that?
Not exactly
that. That is true, but in the law, in the statement of the law, there is one more.
If you take velocity difference per second, it is same.
No, what you have to look at it is like this. Take the same statement. Okay, all objects, all bodies, irrespective of size and mass, fall at the same rate. Is it true? You have to add one more condition to make it true.
In back.
Okay, because it's not true in for example even in this case. Okay. Suppose I take a large ballon of cotton and a small shot of lead or something, and then you drop them, certainly the lead drops faster than the cotton. So that clearly indicates that this law doesn't hold in the actual real life, in the real earthy situations. You have to create non-earthy situations, that is you have to create vacuum. But do you have any idea how he might have arrived at this?
Experimentally.
So that was one idea. So he arrived at it through experiment. Then, any other? What experiment did he conduct? What is the wedge experiment? So you are saying that the inclined plane is what made him do this?
That is
See, inclined plane. So, of course, I mean, you may be right, but then you have to tell what is the relation between inclined plane and falling object. Inclined plane is a rolling body, not a falling object. What is that? Yes. What is it? So if the angle of inclination is, if the angle of inclination is 90 degrees, then it's equivalent to the fall. So that is one of the important observations Galileo indeed makes. And he was also the first person to make that kind of analogy, saying that a falling body is actually nothing but this thing. But he also makes an interesting argument about why he chooses inclined plane. So we'll come to that a little later. But still, how did he arrive at this? It's an interesting thing. What kind of experiment he would have conducted? Inclined plane he conducts, but then that's not the one which leads to this particular law. Why? Because there, how will he roll a cotton? How will he roll something which is so heavy? Other thing is also, he says that the law actually says that for all sizes and for all masses, which means that even if it is something like an earth, as big as an earth, it would still fall at the same rate. That's the whole idea. So what kind of experiment do you think Galileo did? So this is what we hear. We hear from some books and some places, and some lot of people keep telling us that he went on top of the Leaning Tower of Pisa, where Galileo lived in Pisa. He worked and he researched in Pisa. He used to teach mathematics in the University of Pisa. So they thought that he would go there, and he dropped a feather, a coin, and a cannon, and then they all fell in Pisa at the same time, because the Pisa was vacuum. There was no resistance. No, they evacuated. They evacuated the whole town. They announced curfew. They announced curfew for all matter of existence. So that experiment is a cock and bull story. That experiment never took place. Even if it took place, people would have laughed at them. People would have laughed at the insightful statement that Galileo made. Okay, this particular generalization that he made, which we consider is true, right? Today we consider, Galileo's law of free fall is a correct statement. So at that time, how did he convince people? What kind of things? So the point is that it's not experiment. He did not do experiment to arrive at this law. Okay. He has not done an experiment. Could he arrive at this law from observing meticulously the things around the world? You remember induction? Now, what is induction about? Empirically, from observation, if you derive some generalizations, you call it induction. Okay? So you say every tree is green is an inductive statement. Sometimes, of course, you know very well that all trees are certainly not green. That's a different story. So, do you think it is possible to arrive at this particular law through induction, that is experience? So, if it is not experiment, do you think you would have got it from experience? It's not possible, because why? We discussed last time, counterintuition is one of the characteristic features of statements of science. And this particular law of free fall is a paradigm example of that. Just as Newton's first law, just as a very simple statement that Earth is revolving around Sun, or this particular law that we are discussing today, all of them are counterintuitive, which essentially means that you cannot ever arrive at them by observation and from experience. So experience doesn't give you that kind of principles. So then what is the question? How do you get it? Like Kekule got the snake dream and then announced the benzene structure next day morning. So Galileo also must have been having a conversation with God, and then God must have told that, you know, all bodies irrespective of size and mass will fall at the same rate in vacuum, and then he heard it and announced it. Would that be true? Pardon? I'm not hearing.
Theoretical analysis.
Theoretical analysis. Okay. So theoretical analysis is the other. So how many of you think that theoretical analysis will get you that to that hypothesis? What is the
meaning?
Yeah, what is the meaning of theoretical analysis? You don't believe that it's theoretical analysis, so you're writing it to him. So tell me, what is the theoretical analysis here? You also don't want to hold on to this anymore. You said it.
Yes.
So then,
theory
means what? Which theory? But where is the theory? The point is that this principle itself is the theory, right?
Yes.
So how do you arrive at the theory is the question that we are asking. See, if you read history, you sometimes will be wondering that why did somebody get this idea and others didn't get this idea. That's one of the often asked questions in history of science. For example, why did Indians didn't do the kind of science that was happening? Indians are also very well educated. They are also as good as in mathematics. They also have wonderful theoretical insights. But they haven't postulated the laws of mechanics. They haven't postulated that sun is at the center of the earth. Though there are some schools in India who did believe that the sun is at the center, such as the Kerala School of Mathematics. So, but then what is the point here?
He did some experimental
observation.
No, sir.
So that is like, you know, you are putting them together. Yes. Yeah, you said something. That's interesting. No.
Experimental experiences.
No. While I am writing experimental observation, I heard some word. That's very interesting. What is that?
Experimental experience.
Experimental experience. Is that the what you said? I heard differently. Maybe I was hoping to hear some answer from you. That's why I'm hearing things which are not even said. We did briefly mention about them later. There is another thing called
thought experiment.
So thought experiment is very close to theoretical analysis. So you assume few things that you know very well are true, and then what you do a mathematical induction, extend it, and you start working out those things. And today we will be, while discussing the story, we will look at all these things and try to understand the nature of science as well. Like we have already discussed nature of science last class about what are the various characteristics that science must have. And then we have experiment was one of them. Counterintuition was also one of them. But today we would like to see as a real case from Galileo's own books that he has written. Because Galileo not only wrote about the results of his analysis, he also said how he arrived at it. I mean, nowadays no theory, no scientist would ever tell you how he arrived at it. Because if he tells you how he arrived at it, he would think that, you know, other people will also use the same methodology and discover more things before him. So people are very secretive nowadays, but Galileo certainly was not. He was explaining the exact reason. But people didn't publish those things before. Even Galileo didn't publish those things. He considered them as simple manuscripts. He only published the results later. Now we look at the. So, before he could say something like this, there is a need for him to prove possible. Why? Because Aristotle argued against it. We'll see Aristotle's argument also, why he argued against it today. Because Galileo has to first argue against Aristotle in order to make room that vacuum is possible. And so let us see what are the things that he does. One of the first things that he does is to talk, is to do some kind of conceptual cleansing. Conceptual cleansing, you can what you call it as clarifying the concepts, clarifying the meaning of concepts, defining some concepts very clear. Now, when, because we are talking about motion, so now what is motion? So Aristotle, we have also discussed earlier the categorical way of thinking and atomist way of thinking or relativist way of thinking. So if you ask me what is emotion according to a categorical way of thinking, what would you say? Pardon? Okay, so we have already heard about the Aristotle's aspect of motion in the sense that, you know, everything has its own natural place, and you know they tend to reach to that natural place. But the point here is that, so the motion will have cause, and that cause would be usually will happen only if the object is displaced from its natural place, it will start moving towards it. That was the idea. But apart from that, one interesting thing that you would see is that fast and slow are considered properties of motion. Are they properties of motion? Is the question I am asking.
No, they are the same idea of the substance.
No,
means they are same.
The question here is, fast and slow,
yes,
are properties of motion.
Yes. They are one and the same.
Oh, how do you say that they are one and the same?
It's a form of other thing only. It's
so slow and fast are same?
That's relative.
Yes, sir.
So how?
So we say slow relative to something only. Fast also we say relative to something.
Right. So this is exactly what Galileo does, in contrast to Aristotle. So Aristotle has one reason for fast motion, another reason for slow motion. So what is the reason for slow motion? Reason for slow motion, he says, is friction. Naturally, all motion should happen fast. If it is motion, it should happen fast. Why you would not expect all the time fast motion? It's because of friction, because the medium in which the motion takes place gives some resistance. So the medium acts on the moving object, and that is why it moves slow. So now what do you see here? In Aristotle's explanation, you have one theory for fast motion and another theory for slow motion. So that is like this. Suppose if there is some object here and it has to fall down. Why? Because its natural place is earth, because it's an earthy substance. So it has to fall down. While it is falling down, it will move fast. If at all it is slowing down, it is because of this medium, because it is offering resistance. So that is the analysis of Aristotle. So he gave two theories, one for fast motion, one for slow motion. And according to the relativistic kind of an idea that you suggested, saying that, you know, slow and fast are relative, they are one and the same. The only difference is in numbers, such as one is moving at one rate, the other is moving at a different rate. So the rate of displacement is different. So the rate of displacement is what is different, and therefore these are both one. And the second important thing is, what is motion at all? What is it? Is it a property of a body? It's an event. Is motion an event? All of
yes.
you agree? It's an event. So does event happen because it's an event but of something, right? So then you can say that it's a property of something. Like it's the bottle that is moving. Okay? It's me who is moving. It's a fan that is rotating. So the rotation is a property of the fan.
I move the bottle separately. Now I keep the bottle on the table and I move the table also.
Hmm.
And I say that work is a, then motion is a property of the bottle.
So then the table is moving.
Property of what? Both.
So that's why.
Motion is universal.
No, the motion is universal is fine. I mean that's not the issue here. So here is a very important conceptual clarity that we have to introduce, and that's what Galileo introduces. So while he's looking at these issues of motion being fast and slow, he also introduces a very important concept, and that he says that it's a state. Motion is a state of a body. It's not a property of the body. It's a state of the body. Now, it's a state of the body means you're actually talking about what is its position with respect to the others. So motion has to be always, so in that sense, at least in the theory of mechanics, the first relativistic theory was proposed by Galileo. So Galileo, so whole idea, I mean you must have heard about Galilean relativity, which is different from Einstein's relativity. But the Galilean relativity is not what we are talking about. We are just saying that motion is a state, includes very much the Galilean relativity adhered in it. So that definition actually comes from the theoretical assumption. But the actual statement will have to wait. I mean that's exactly not what he's talking about. So this is one of the clarifications that he makes. Now having made this clarification, he has some more things to do. Because this is not enough to arrive at the law of free fall or anything like that. So he makes a number of other things. One of the other important thing that he says is, he starts from the same kind of model that Aristotle is talking about, which is of the kind something like things will go to its natural place, and he also thinks that medium is some good starting point. So this is a medium is something that you have to take into account. Do you think medium should be taken into account?
Yes.
When the bodies are falling?
Yes.
Why? Because of friction. But if the medium is removed, would the motion be there?
Yes.
Now that is an important thing. So actually speaking, what happens, initially Galileo starts saying that medium is one of the factors, I will say, is a factor. Medium is a factor. Like Aristotle also, medium is a factor for understanding motion. But at the end, as per the, if you look at the statement of the Galilean law of free fall, you are saying that you are saying it is in vacuum. That means no medium should be there. So you start with medium is a factor, and then you say medium is not a factor. So the story that we are going to do is a story about how did Galileo reach this conclusion from here. He started right from here, but then he concludes it. So how does he do it? Now, do you know what is the size of medium? Did Galileo at that time, did he have a science of medium at that time? No? Are you sure?
We don't.
He does have a science of medium. Because the science of medium was already erected by another greatest achiever. We have already discussed about him, Archimedes. And what is that science of medium called?
Floating.
floating bodies. Fluid dynamics. Statics. Not exactly fluid dynamics, sorry. Hydrostatics. Now, how is hydrostatics to do with the fall of bodies?
Any medium.
Okay, fine. Hydrostatics, okay, we will now generalize it to all medium. Fine. Let's generalize it to all medium, like such as air, such as earth. Earth also could be a medium. Right? So let's generalize everything. So that now there is a medium. Now what are the various mediums that are possible?
Liquid medium is
medium. Liquid medium and? Okay, but according to Aristotle, because Aristotle said that there are two extreme things, that is fire and earth are extremes. In between you have, what is this?
Air.
This is air and this is water. So this is not a medium. This, he said, is also not a medium. He says, according to Aristotle, these are the things which pass through the medium. This is medium. Medium, the term also comes because of that reason. You know, the term medium becomes, it is mid between the four elements. The medium term also comes because of Aristotle's idea of what is a medium. A medium is only air and water. Why? Earth can pass through air and water. Energy also can pass through, that is, you know, fire also can pass through water and air. So that's the whole idea of the whole idea. He doesn't have an idea that fire can actually also pass through earth. He did not consider it as a possibility.
Rain.
Yeah, rain is what? Water. So it can pass through. It can pass through. It can pass through rain. So this is the kind of conception that Aristotle had. So the medium is anyway fluid, so medium will pass through medium also. But then other things are actually not medium. So he denied that fire and earth are mediums, but only air and water are the mediums. So he qualified that kind of thing. But of course, the problem of course we have seen is that since Galileo is not a categorical thinker, he is an atomist. He was tending more towards atomism. And in the atomistic model, we have seen the picture of how these things are there. The only difference between them is density. So if the only difference is density, then anything can become a medium. So then how do you articulate what can fall through what? So what will fall through what only depends on
relative
density. So that's the only thing that comes into the picture. So Galileo thought, it is therefore possible for me to explain why objects fall on the basis of relative density. So he started looking at how just by looking at relative density it is possible to solve this problem. So he started proposing, for example, that objects will fall on the basis of relative density. Now how do you propose the relative density here? Now if you want to propose relative density, you have to have some motion of you of course have to define what is density, but apart from that you also have to give a kind of a clear notion of what is so you have what is called heavy and light, because we are talking about fall of bodies. Okay, so I leave this, the chalk is falling down because chalk is heavy. But what if I have I can't hold hydrogen like this. Suppose if it is hydrogen, what will happen? It will go up, not go down. Why? Because that is lighter. So he starts like this, heavy and light. Now the question again is that Aristotle also discusses these issues. Aristotle also discusses these issues. but he discusses them in this way. Whereas Galileo discusses them as heavier and lighter. So this is the conceptual clarity that he does. Earlier we saw one more example that he did, that is for fast and slow. He says faster and slower. He makes it relative. And similarly, he does the same thing here. He converts heavy to heavier and light lighter. And having done this, now he has to talk about, he has to give a definition still. So what do you mean by heavier? So let us say you have to tell what is heavier. Now how will you use? So apply whatever you know already and define what is heavier. How will you define what is heavier? Or for that matter, how will you define what is lighter? For Aristotle, if you want to define what is heavy and what is light, it depends on what substance it is made of. You understood? What does it mean? That means, depending on what substance you have, you are either light or heavy. That means there is a substance which is lighter, which essentially means something like this, that if you have a levitating substance in you, you would start floating. And in fact, that is held very strongly by a lot of people. Lot of them, including people like Priestley, have argued that there is a levitating substance. That means even after scientific revolution took place in physics, okay, levitating substance is still being probed for by people, because they thought that, because Aristotle's views were so strong, the only difference was that he did not consider that this is a relative notion, and if it is an absolute notion, where should you look for the cause? The cause should be in the substance. If it is an absolute notion, the cause should be in the substance, not in terms of the state. So heavier and lighter is not a state for this Aristotle. So what he did, he gave the notion that there are some substances which are heavy always, irrespective of the state in which they are. So heaviness means always heavy. Lighter means always light. So it depends on the kind of substance that makes it heavier or lighter. Do you agree? I said some time ago, hydrogen is lighter. But is it possible for me to make a hydrocarbon which is heavier? So then what? How can you say that hydrogen is lighter, therefore it should go out? It will not go out in that bonded situation. So that is, if hydrogen is in a state, is in a state of bondedness, for example, in a chemical bond, then it would not be lighter, that it will go up. It will stay where it is. So carbon dioxide is a gas, so it will be lighter than anything else. But what is diamond? Diamond is very heavy. And so it will fall, but it is made of carbon. Okay, so what exactly here means is, so here Aristotle is made wrong by this kind of arguments. So what essentially here means, it is not the substance, like it is not that carbon that makes it heavier or lighter. Carbon may also become lighter, depending on its state. That is, whether carbon is in the gaseous state, liquid state or solid state. And you do know very well that elements can be in different states. So all this understanding didn't come to us just like that, because they don't even know, for example, what are the elements. Even for Galileo, let us be very clear about it. That's the reason why we have to read history. Though Galileo did interesting discoveries, but he still don't know what are the elements which we consider today are elements. He still thinks that the elements are the same things, earth, air, water, and these are the four elements that even Galileo is working with. That is, even at the end of 16th and the beginning of 17th century, Galileo is still working about the elements. So elements are still not eliminated. Now under this kind of situation, now we have to understand this. So now how do you define this? You said earlier that the motion is a relative motion. We'll come to that a little later, but now let us define these two notions. So come with your ideas. Now how do you define what is heavier and what is lighter?
Depending on the medium.
Depending on the medium. So how do you define, let us say this is a chalk, I keep it, okay, in the air.
It goes down.
It goes down. Why?
Chalk is heavier.
No, heavier than?
Yeah.
The medium.
Yeah.
The heavier than the medium. So now, what will happen if I put, let us say, something else here, let us say water drop. It will fall down. Why?
Yeah.
And it will, after it falls down here, will it still fall down?
No.
What about this?
Yes.
It may still move down till it's there. Does it explains everything?
Yes.
So what he does now, Galileo applies Archimedes' floating bodies to this problem of falling objects. Okay, having done this, now he comes to very interesting kinds of experiments. Some of them he does, some of them are thought experiments. What kind of experiments he does? Let's see. Suppose you take a substance like this. Let's call it A. Now you take another substance as big as this. Let's call it B. For the argument's sake, let us say that both of them are made of wood or both of them are made of metal. So they are same substance but are different sizes. Now, based on our understanding of what is heavier and what is lighter, correct? Based on our understanding of what is heavier and what is lighter, if I put this in air, what would be its relative heaviness? And what about this one?
Same.
It would be the same.
Yes.
And therefore, Galileo arrives at this first stage in his discovery. Says that irrespective of the size, the bodies will fall. They must fall at the same rate. Why? Because they are falling only because of one reason. What is the cause of falling? The cause of falling is only because of heaviness. Heaviness is a wrong word to use, because they are heavier. Because heaviness is a categorical term used only by Aristotelians. Atomists don't use that word. That's the secondary issue. We'll come to that.
Sir, Archimedes should have proposed this before. If he has taken into account the Archimedes method, then he should take into account that also.
In fact, he does. He does take that into account as well. He does take that into account. But then what he is actually trying to say is that, suppose if I have to talk in terms of, you know, the medium and the cause for falling. So what is important here is the cause for falling. Okay, so there, this is the issue. So friction is certainly one of the things that Galileo keeps in mind. I mean, he thinks that, you know, larger bodies will be resisted more than the smaller bodies, and therefore the how much the medium will allow the object to fall is clearly under consideration. Now there is another important thing that he does at this point. Suppose if this is the medium, how would you know? How do you solve this problem? By a very clear understanding. And how? So for that, again he depends on Archimedes. Suppose there is a floating body. Okay. This is the medium. This body is floating here. Now, in this example, why is this body floating? But there is some interesting imaginary thing that Galileo does here. And the imaginary thing that Galileo does here is that he sees a balance here. This famous Archimedean balance. Can you see balance in this picture? No?
Equilibrium.
Yeah, there is equilibrium, right? Yes. But so now that you know that there is equilibrium, is it in equilibrium?
Yes.
So if it is in equilibrium, then tell me what is the equilibrium there? In equilibrium, you understand that, you know, that there are two things and both are equal and opposite. So tell me what is equal and opposite here?
It is trying to go down.
So what is the other medium?
What is
it? See, so I told you that you have to
between air and
a kind of a medium here.
Yeah.
So it is floating, why? Because of the other force.
Yeah.
The
air, the buoyant force.
This is a floating body. So we are talking about liquid here.
So air it is trying to go down.
Yeah, in the air it will go down, fine.
Water,
why? In air it will go down, why? Because it's not in equilibrium.
Yeah, but in water it's trying to go.
Okay, why? Because the other force is overpowering, whereas in here it's not overpowered. Because this is managing to resist the thing here.
Yes.
So that is the reason why. Now let us construct, how will that be look like? Suppose if this is a balance. Okay. The fulcrum. Now, where is the fulcrum here? Where are the two bodies? One body is very clear. One body is this. And what is the other body? What is the one body is the thing which is floating itself. Okay, so this is the floating body.
Let's say body is the amount of water
that is displaced. So that again comes from Archimedes.
Yes.
So this is the water that is displaced. The amount of water that is displaced. And now this and this are in equilibrium. So once you have that in picture, then you would be able to clearly, you know, make out exactly how you can understand this situation. Now the point is, he says, falling bodies are not in equilibrium. So how do you understand a falling body? A falling body is a place where, so to speak, the fulcrum is broken. Broken. So imagine a balance. Imagine a balance with two equivalent weights and they are in equilibrium. So that's a floating state, correct? Now what happens if you take away the fulcrum? It will fall down.
Both
will fall down.
Yes.
That is the point that he is trying to say. And that is what gives him the what you call the rise of the hair, in terms of, you know, he gets a clear, he is completely separated from, he is completely emancipated from Aristotelian thinking. Now here, you look at the same example here again. What makes him think like this? He has not done this experiment. He has done a thought experiment. The thought experiment that he does is, okay, I have a liquid on one side, which is of the equal side. I have this one on this side. And if the fulcrum breaks, both will fall down. It's not that only one will fall, the other will fall. So what is holding water is also because there is some other balancing force for water as well. You getting a point? Why is water not falling? Or why is air not falling? There is some other balancing force for the air as well, and that's why it's not falling. Now, this imagination doesn't come from experience. This imagination comes from theoretical analysis, or in other words, thought experiment. So only thought experiments of this kind, and this thought experiment was rigorously applied. So what he did essentially is, he took to the nail whatever Archimedes discovered. he believed in Archimedes 100%. So Galileo is an Archimedean scholar. He taught the mathematics of Archimedes. He taught the statics and hydrostatics of Archimedes in the University of Pisa for several years. So he's a master of both Archimedes as well as Aristotle. But at some point in his life, he found that Archimedes and Aristotle are not going together well if you apply them in every situation. Such as, for example, while he's solving the problem of motion. So while he's attempting to solve the problem of motion, he found that there is an enormous amount of discrepancy between the two. And he identifies this so nicely in his book. So he writes about in about 1590, I suppose, 1598, the late part of the 16th century. In the late part of the 16th century, he writes a book called De Motu. Okay, the book is called De Motu. De Motu actually means, it's written in Latin. And De Motu in Latin means on motion. So he writes a book called On Motion. So whatever I told you today, so far, up to this point, comes from here. Now, this particular book, and what did he announce in this book? He announced only one thing, that all objects will fall. Whether it is water, whether it is air, whether it is fire, whatever it is, everything will fall. The only thing that is holding them is that there is an equal and opposite force that is acting, and that is why they are not falling. So if at all there is anything that is not falling, it is only because of that force. So that clearly tells exactly how he looked at the entire thing. And then he also gives another thought experiment. Think of a world where there is no air. Then he says, even fire will fall down. Think about a world where there is only fire, there is no air, there is no water, and there is no earth. Where will fire be? Fire be at the center of the earth. No, center of the earth in the sense what? It will occupy the center, so to speak. Why? Because what should keep it at the center? The relative position, right? So when fire is the only thing that is there, fire is the heaviest thing in the world, according to the atomistic thinking. So therefore, where should fire be? Even fire would come to the center of the earth. So earth, see, earth means, earth doesn't mean the object earth. Earth means the solid state. See, I already told you that, you know, they are not naive to think, they are talking, whenever they are talking about water, they are not talking about water, they are talking about liquidity. That is very clear. Okay, so let's not give them that kind of naivety out there. So when they are talking about earth, so what they are saying is that if you take the whole thing that we have, which is basically, this is what is called the terrestrial body. So in the terrestrial body, suppose if there is only earth and there is only water, then where will water be? Water will be at the center. Water will be at the center because there is no earth.
Yes.
So this is exactly what he argued in his early writings. And all this is not experience, because that is not possible to experience. So this is what is called thought experiment. So thought experiment has these characteristic features. Thought experiment has these characteristic features, but which exactly matches the real experiments. In real experiments, what do we do? I told you the other day, what is the hallmark of an experiment?
Control.
Now, what is the hallmark of this thought experiment? There is a control as well here. What is it? You put a condition saying that let there be no earth. Where will water be? Let there be no water. Where will air be? Okay, let there be no air. Suppose if you remove only air, then fire will be in direct contact with water. So this is the kind of thought experiment that he arose at. Okay, interesting thing is that now he is saying that what he says so far is that all objects, whether it is smaller or bigger, okay, will fall only because of the relative densities, so to speak. But from that it doesn't follow that irrespective of how do you know that it is happening in vacuum as well? In vacuum, how will they know that, you know, everything will fall at the same rate? So in DMO2, he did not arrive at that final statement.
From here also you can arrive, sir, because either actually both should fall, but they are not falling at same speed. This is due to medium. If medium is only not there, there is no resistive both, sir. So both will fall.
Is it not true that?
No, but the problem then is that even Aristotle thought about it.
Yes.
The problem that then they thought that if there is only fire. Okay, if fire is also not there, then there is nothing to fall. So, and therefore, but what is interesting very here is that what will be the nature of a falling object? So, if you have a gaseous balloon and if it is vacuum, and if you have a cannon ball made of lead, let us say, okay, the ball as well as the cannon will fall in vacuum at the same rate. And that's a very counterintuitive statement to make. Now, how do you arrive at that? Is the second part of the story. But before he goes to the second part of the story, what Galileo has to do? Galileo has to disprove Aristotle's statement that vacuum is impossible. So, first thing that he has to do is Galileo has to argue that vacuum is possible. Okay, there seems to be a question here.
I didn't understand. We can find some error in the body.
What? How will you find out? What is it?
Because, sir, actually these two objects will fall of different sizes. And also if different masses are there, then also it will fall. But they are not falling at same speed. This is they should fall. This is, they are not falling of same speed because of medium.
Right.
But Aristotle also knows, if there is no medium back,
what you're saying is perfectly right. What will it tell you is that they are falling at the same speed. But which is actually not correct.
Means,
because there is a rate of change of speed.
Means both are falling at the same rate.
Yeah, both of them are falling at the same rate. So that is granted. But the problem that I am trying to talk about is that the vacuum is not possible at that time.
Yes.
Today we take it for granted that vacuum is something,
sir,
that can be...
Absolute vacuum is possible. Means we always say vacuum
is a relative.
10 to the power minus 9, something in numbers.
Right. So that's like, you know, so essentially what we are saying in today's term, vacuum is not a correct concept. Today we call it low pressure.
Low pressure. Means absolute means, is it possible when it is...
Is it possible, sir? In moon there is no atmosphere.
Means, sir, yeah.
Pardon?
In moon there is no atmosphere. Is there? So it is.
No, but it's not true that moon atmosphere is zero.
Yes.
There is atmosphere, but it is low pressure. It's not like an absolute vacuum there.
So in every space.
Even in space, it's not. No, there's no absolute vacuum anywhere in the space. Absolute vacuum is nowhere. It's possibly there only between intermolecular spaces, if at all there is any. Like between electrons and protons maybe, or maybe between the two protons there is so much space, we know that, because you know a lot of rays pass through, because that's why we come to know that there is so much space. That was Thomson's experiment, that we came to know that, you know, atom actually is not even a solid. I mean it has so much vacuum, just as, you know, there is as much distance between Earth and the Sun, there are similar kind of distances between the elementary particles inside the water, inside the substance. But the point here is that, you know, in order to make room, that, you know, this kind of space is actually possible. Why? Because, you know, you remember Aristotle argued that there is substances. And what is a substance? Substance is something that is a matter. A matter is something that occupies space. Right? So a substance must occupy space. So if there is a substance, and if these are the substances, and these substances must occupy space. So if there is fire, if it is occupying space, then if there is no fire, there will be no space. So that is the reason why, according to Archimedes, according to Aristotle, Vacuum is not possible. In fact, Archimedes didn't even bother to look at these issues about, you know, the different things. I mean, his line of research was completely about statics and hydrostatics and, you know, applying mathematics to physical problems and things like that. He didn't worry about this. But then Galileo is both a scholar of Aristotle as well as a scholar of Archimedes. He knows both mathematics as well as all the works of Aristotle. And now in that process, he found out that there is a conflict between these two views. Okay, now let us focus on the second part of the story. And the second part of the story is that though we have so far found out that all the objects will fall down, okay, all objects will fall down, whether it is lighter or heavier or whatever. Because lighter objects are also heavier. Why? Because lighter objects also have some substance in them. Okay, therefore even lighter objects will also fall down ultimately. And having said that, now the next issue would be, what is the meaning of what?
Lighter objects will also fall down.
Lighter objects will also fall down in a condition where they will be heavier to some other lighter object. That's the meaning of that. So that is the meaning. That's because, you know, so one of the things that you should remember here is that in the case of Aristotle, he had two theories. One for levitation, one for floating, one for falling. Now, what Galileo is doing is, Galileo is giving one single theory for both. So he is saying that only one theory is enough for all kinds of things. So even if you want to explain, for example, why a bubble placed in water will go up. And he says that a bubble that is placed in water will go up and it will be equivalent to the fall of a body. So there is no difference between a bubble going up, because that's also like falling. So that body is also like falling body. So you, if you have a theory that explains the fall of body, the same theory should also explain the bubble going up. So this is the kind of uniformity, and this uniformity is also because of the symmetrical thinking that they apply. And this symmetrical thinking is part of the theoretical analysis. That is, if you don't think symmetrically, you will never do mathematics. And as you know, that the principle of balance is also the basis of all modern mathematics, because algebra is the is balance essentially. If you look at it, because, you know, all algebraic equations are solvable only when you think that there is an equation. And to think that there is an equation is essentially similar to a balancing situation. So unless you balance left hand side and the right hand side, or you bring the left hand side and right hand side to one side and subtract, then other side has to be zero. So that belief is essentially Archimedean insight, and that has been brought into place to analyze and calculate so many things. Now let us look at the later part of it. So the later part is actually this is another thought experiment that Galileo did. Let me see, there are some, I'm trying to give you the exact you want to take a small break? Huh? Very short break, because I want to continue immediately. So take a break of about 5 minutes and we come back.